We're going to continue our discussions with Advocate Debbie Ainslie about the legal aspects of, in this case, adoption. So without further ado, I'm going to pass over to Debbie to talk to us about her legal knowledge about adoption.
Hello, Hank. Yes, adoption, the first thing I think we need to know is that you don't need a lawyer or an advocate unless something's going wrong. Adoption is handled by social workers and it's handled in the children's court. And you don't need an attorney or an advocate. But I have worked on a number of adoption cases, and that is when things go wrong, that you need to get a legal person involved. So typically what will happen is a child will land up in the system, and that is the Department of Social Development, I'll refer to as DSD. Either they've been removed from a parent because of neglect or abuse, or a parent dies and they get cared for in the system from DSD, who the previous model was to fund children's homes. It's some hiccup with that at the moment, but that's one of the ways. They often, these children are being placed in either foster care or in these children's homes, and they get, if they need to be adopted, they get placed on a register that is maintained by the Director General of DSD. And parents, people who are wanting to adopt, will apply and put their names on this register called RACA, and social workers will then look for a match. So you've got a social worker who's handling the child's matter, and then adoption social workers who are matching children and parent and prospective parents. So there's, and once that match is made, then copious reports are written, and part of the reporting that is has to be before the children's court is a letter from the Department of Social Development, and it's got to be signed by the head of department, which is the provincial level of DSD, saying that they approve the adoption. There's an adoption panel which interviews the social worker and investigates the child's background, and will then tell the HOD whether this should be approved or not. They're in an advice capacity to the HOD. That letter is peremptory. Only if in certain circumstances can it be waived. Although I must say that even if DSD says that the adoption is not approved, it doesn't assert the children's court's jurisdiction. The children's court magistrate will make that decision. So that's the process for local adoptions in that scenario. Obviously, if you're a foster parent and you've now bonded with this child, you can apply for adoption as well. And in fact, foster parents are almost given preference in that if you have a foster child and somebody else wants to adopt, the court will ask whether the foster parents want to adopt. The biggest issues have been around that DSD approval. Okay, I think what I need to also raise here is what is the role of the biological parent. So in the scenario that I painted, the child has been removed because of either abuse or neglect, or I said where parents died. So DSD's view is that children should be with biological families. There's a lot of politicking about whether it's DSD doesn't want black babies to be with white families, but having done a full analysis of KZN's adoptions over every single adoption over 7 years in KZN. I didn't find that to be true. But DSD certainly does like families to be, children to be placed within families. And I think that there's a very logical reason for this, and that is a belief in ancestors. So if you believe in ancestors, then you want that child to be connected to their ancestors because you believe that is their best possible life. And that it's a religious belief will be the lens through which you look at what is best for this child, because remembering that the best interests of the child are paramount in all of this. But that is not a uniform view within the department and across the board with social workers.
So that's mostly the default view.
It's a lens that some people look through. Now, remembering that not all people believe in ancestors, even if you've grown up with that belief, some people don't assign the same sort of power. It's like some people are Christians and they believe in God, and some people believe Christians and believe in ancestors as well, and some people are atheists and don't believe in anything. So it's just a lens through which a lot of people look at this process. So the process being that you are disturbing the relationship with the ancestors, you're placing a child in another family. What was very interesting in the research that in preparing for a court case is that a very reputable and respected scholarly Sangoma, actually in Gauteng, had for a different litigation, had written an expert report about a process that you can do, a ritual basically, that calls the child's ancestors to come with and calls the new ancestors. So, and that way the child still has their best possible. Now, somebody who doesn't believe in ancestors, this is all gobbledygook, but if your fundamental belief is that, then you can see how that would sway. So if we go back to the parents or the family, this adoption is regulated through the Children's Act, Chapter 14 for local adoptions and 15 for intercountry. And part of what the adoption process is that if the parents exist and the child has, for example, been removed or been abandoned, then the parents have to, there's a process where parents give consent. But if you haven't paid any attention to your child, or if the child has been abandoned for a period of 2 years, that consent can be waived. So even if the child has parents, but those are not good parents and they haven't been around for 2 years, the magistrate can, and in fact, can waive the consent. And if you are wanting to give your child up for adoption, then you can sign consent, and that has to be done before a magistrate. So that it's
Okay.
informed
Yeah.
consent. There was a restriction on who could adopt previously, and if a mother remarried, then she had to sign the children away and then adopt them. This is, 20 years ago, 25, well, more, 40 years ago. She would have to sign her children away, so giving consent for the adoption, and then adopt them with her new spouse. So she, the biological mother, became the adopted mother. But that is no longer true. You can now have a step-parent adoption. So the mother no longer has to sign away, but the stepfather can then become the adopted father. that's probably the quickest adoptions, the process that's the quickest. You can also decide at babies at birth that you don't want to have this child, and you can say that you want to give them up for adoption immediately, and then the only thing is after the birth you have to go to the magistrate and just sign that consent. Again, there's social workers at hospitals and things, so a lot of very poor mothers, and I mean financially poor, who feel that they cannot afford to look after another child or this child, or are discouraged by the social workers often, again through this lens of belief in ancestors, and also because you shouldn't not be able to look after your child because the theory or the wish is that we had enough resources in the state so that you could be provided with sufficient resources so that you can raise this child without that relationship being severed. Reality is in the children's grant in this country is wholly insufficient to raise a child. There aren't other grants to do with housing or subsidy. Well, you can get RDP housing, whatever, but reality is the child is going to be an adult if you're only applying when you get pregnant, or when you have the baby. Other countries, so for example, in England, the support structure is such that you finances is less likely to be a reason to give up a child for adoption. There's a much stronger safety net than we have in South Africa. But the reality is that if you can't feed a child and you want what's best for this child, adoption is an option. If I can pause also just to mention that it can also be a temporary situation that you don't have the finances or what. So if I think of a young woman who's just starting her career and right at this moment she doesn't have the finances, but she just needs a couple of years to get on her feet, that's an ideal situation for a reunification and where a child can either be placed in foster care on a temporary basis or, and in some circumstances, crisis, what we used to call a crisis parent, and that is a child who's in need of care right now, but the aim is reunification with the biological parent. And I've been involved in cases like that where a couple who had lost their both of them had lost their jobs and they had no money and they gave their child up for adoption. The child was placed with a prospective I don't know if it was foster, I can't remember now if it was foster or whether it was prospective adopted parents, but those parents absolutely fell in love with this baby. And within the window of the parent being able to change their mind, the 60 days, once they've signed that consent, the father got a job. So they went back and said, no, we don't, we can now look after our baby. And then we had the two families fighting for their baby, the biological. It was the most sad matter I've ever done. I'm sure the advocate on the other side was exactly the same as me, in tears outside of court. But the child was then given back to the biological parents. And by the time we got the mom had also got a job. And so their financial situation had turned around entirely.
Heartbreaking, heartbreaking, whichever way you look at it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that child is one of the lucky ones. Hey, so there also the other thing that happens that we have a very, very high percentage, very, tragically, children are abandoned, and this in part relates to this the difficulty that because of the ancestors believed, and because of the lack of support, and DSD's view, the social worker's view that the parents should be raising their children, that women give birth and abandon their children. So there's been in Durban, there was a baby found in a dustbin, there was a baby found in a drain pipe. And my own brother is a foundling. So He was abandoned. He was born prematurely. He was underweight, and he was abandoned. And so, in that case, there's no roots to ever follow, or you don't know where the parents are, and that is a criminal offense. So, if his mother had been caught, she would have been charged with a criminal offense of abandonment, which is also very harsh. There was an attempt. Baby Savers is an NGO that started to create safe drop boxes where women could leave their babies, and that was, I don't know if they were successful, but DSD attempted to shut that down because that is actually providing a means for a crime to be committed, in their view. In the view of the NGO, it was to try and save babies. We don't, as a nation, record how many children are abandoned, how many babies are abandoned, and there's an estimate that I think it was one in only one in three are found alive, and it was in the thousands when the research was done in, I think it was 2011, but I'm not sure of that date. Someone called Dee Blackie did research and on this abandoning of babies, and many of them die. And those who survive are then placed in children's homes, and if they're lucky, like my brother, get placed in a place of safety, crisis mother with my mother, and who fell in love with him and was too old to adopt him until he got to six, and he'd been living with him his whole life with my folks, and there when he was 6 years old, the adoption was permitted. He went to them as a child in need. My mom, being a crisis mother, she's the kind of person who she'd get a phone call and say, "We have a baby, or we have a family who's we need to put in safety." Sometimes, the one I remember was a family of five and two. The twins were 3 months old, and she got them on about 10 minutes' notice, and they stayed for a week. Other times, she's had children for, a year and a half. The very first children that she ever had, the parents were getting divorced, and there was, I think, alcohol abuse or drug abuse or something, and with the dad, and mom didn't have money to look after them, and she had them for about a year and a half, and mom got on her feet, and then they went home to mom. So there's both sides, adoption and trying to have a space for reunification and a temporary safe care of children.
I've got a dozen questions.
Shoot.
Okay. What you've just talked about is mostly babies that can't be looked after by their birth parents and then get given up for adoption. So let me just stay on that subject and ask a question around that. In that case, do the birth parents maintain any rights whatsoever in the future, or only for a short period of time?
The adoption, the finalization of adoption, destroys any legal connection to the child and the parents. And whoever's adopted the children become the legal parents. So if you say in a will, for example, "I leave everything to my children," that includes your adopted children. The birth certificate is amended, the surname is amended, but that child has the right at 18 to get information on the biological about the biological parents, if that child wishes to find it. It's the child's right to have information on the biological parents. The adoptive parents, if there's a medical issue, have the right to get information, medical information relating to the biological families. There is, though, a concept of called open adoption, which is just really a very restricted contact. So an open adoption is a written agreement. It's a post-adoption agreement, and it's formed part of the court order, and it might be that the adoptive parents need to send a photograph once a year, or that can be structured depending on that past relationship between the biological parents and the child. That would Whatever protects the child best is what would be in that written agreement, the post-adoption agreement. You can have an open adoption where that person knows that that's their child, the child knows that's their biological parent, but they still don't have any parental rights or responsibilities.
Okay, my next question. An adoptive child, I would assume, has got exactly the same rights as a natural child
Yes.
once adopted.
Yes.
So if the adoptive parents talk about their children, it includes any adopted child, and on death he will share in the estate and everything else.
And there's the duty to support exists. So adopted child can claim against RAF for support of a deceased parent, or full legal rights. It's established as if that child it's born of the marriage or born of the relationship.
Okay.
You don't distinguish. But I must mention that there is a provision in the Children's Act for rescinding of an adoption, and I know that there was one case, and I hope to heavens that there was only one, where a stepfather adoption, so it was the biological mother, got married and the stepfather adopted, and on divorce applied for rescission of the adoption order, and it was granted. But there was case-specific information in there, and they hadn't bonded, they hadn't, you know, whatever. It was deemed by the court to be in the best interest of the child that that adoption order be rescinded. Had that child, for example, needed maintenance, I don't think it would have been rescinded as it was.
Okay, now you've touched on it, but most of your discussion was about babies and babies that can't be looked after, or children that can't be looked after, and then the parents give them up, or the parents abandon them. The other scenario is one that you touched on, is when a mother marries, parents get divorced, and a mother marries another man, and he wants to adopt a child, and that child might be older. It's not a baby anymore, and that child might be in his teens or a little younger than that. And there is a biological father involved who can either agree or fight the adoption case. Can you talk about that?
If the biological father, who's now the ex-husband to the mother, has not been involved in the child's life, does not contribute to maintenance, or has done harm, the same as neglect or abuse the child, and if that's the case, he might lose parental rights. Then he loses the if he loses his parental rights because of his own bad actions, then his consent is not required. But if you've got a good dad who they just got divorced and he still sees his kids and he looks after them well when they're in his care and he pays maintenance and he's just a normal dad, his consent is required for the stepfather adoption and he doesn't have to give it. So it's really the stepfather adoption occurs in instances where the biological father has either harmed the child, neglected the child, or consents to it. I've just got a case now that I'm working on where the child is actually 17 and the father's just said, I don't want anything to do with this child. And had the mom had his, had a had had she remarried or whatever, the stepfather would then be able to adopt because that father's consent is not required. And you can adopt up to age 18. 18 is a major. You cannot adopt a person who's over age 18.
Okay, and excuse me. There are, I'm sure, scenarios where there's a suspicion about the motivation for adoption is not quite parenting, but maybe another form of relationship. I'm thinking of a young woman who wants to adopt a 13-year-old child, and maybe that's for a relationship.
Child trafficking is a massive big fear in adoption, and that comes in inter-country adoptions a lot. But it could be that the prospective adoptive parent wants to adopt a child so that they've got a built-in slave to do all the washing and the ironing and the cleaning the house, or it could be as you hinted at, as a relationship that's inappropriate. So the inappropriate relationship is taken care of the Sexual Offences Act. That's a criminal offence. Doesn't matter whether they adopted or
Okay.
not. But the child trafficking going to another country out of the jurisdiction of this court, out of the there can't be any follow-up by the social workers because they're out of the country. There's a Hague Convention on inter-country adoption, and our Children's Act has basically incorporated that. There's a lot of safeguards. So, Department of Social Development (DSD) is the central authority, is the authority in each country, and then there is thorough investigations done by the receiving country, the prospective adoptive parents. So in matter that I've got at them, it has been already been caught, and the adoption is progressing. A family from Poland had been looking after a child while they lived in South Africa, and then they went on contract some elsewhere in Africa and then returned to Poland. We don't have a working agreement with Poland in terms of the Hague Convention, but both countries are party to it, and we had to go to court to and also that because they already knew this child but weren't foster parents, we aren't allowed to have, you can't come to South Africa and choose your baby. So that matching on the register that I spoke about earlier, they don't allow an inverted commas baby shopping. So we had to get this declared to be not a case of baby shopping, but more akin to foster family. To get that process going, it hasn't been finalized yet. And then on the traffic, so those are measures we're trying to prevent trafficking. There's a trafficking act specifically, and that's what the social workers' in-depth research is meant to reveal. So prospective adoptive parents, whether local or overseas, get investigated, their home gets visited, relationships are with other family members, friends, colleagues. It's a full investigation and it's done by a social worker. When it's done properly, that's how it's meant to be done. So those, and then the follow-up, there's meant to be a follow-up after an adoption. So social workers are meant, they are required to do follow-up visits after the adoption just to make sure the child is safe as well. So
Okay, that makes sense. For social workers to visit shortly after adoption, but do they also visit and continue to keep an eye on the situation after? For the
in theory, yes. In practice, no.
Okay.
Not in this country. We don't have enough resources for that to be done. But In other countries, yes, and it's normally a planned visit, or they can even do unscheduled visits, but that's part of the Hague Convention, is that the receiving country has got the systems to check on those children that are adopted.
Now, here's a question I think that all adoption cases will have. Let's say you adopt a child when it's a baby. The child doesn't know that it's adopted, and its biological parents are alive and around, but not involved. There's a point at which you will want to tell that child he's adopted, or maybe never. What's your view on that?
I know that previously adoption wasn't spoken about, but in my experience, it's treated as, and I think it's because it's psychologically now accepted that it's the better way to do it, is that the child knows always that they were adopted. And so there'll be a adoption book that they read or whatever, and they'll know, and so the child grows up knowing that they were adopted and remembering that the Act provides that they're allowed to find that information out when they're 18. And then they can choose whether they want to connect. And a lot of people who I know who were adopted or who don't really have a desire to find biological family, it's only if there's a medical problem, that normally is the thing that spurns that. I have an aunt by marriage who was told on her wedding day that she was adopted, which was traumatic and devastating. And so that seems to me that you could go your whole life and not know you're adopted, but we now have genealogy and you I don't can't remember what the websites are, but you can go and look for family online. And so I think hiding an adoption now would be a bit more difficult than it would have been years ago, decades ago. But I think that's a personal choice. Remembering also that, so the Hague Convention and all the law around adoption is to protect children's relationships. So if I just think of America, there was family separations at the border, and there's hundreds of children who they still can't find the biological family of, who might have been deported back to their home countries. But the protections came in after the Second World War, where children, to save children, parents were putting them on trains and getting them to in England. They were or in England, they were going to parts of the country that weren't being bombed and placed with families there, and they were never reunited. And so a lot of the protections about adoption is if you've got a country that's in crisis, whether it's a famine, whether it's a war, whatever, that the government can't decide to for those children to be adopted by other people. It has to be the family. That's what we're trying to prevent those circumstances where children are just shipped out and they don't know their families because their families were trying to save their lives. I don't know if that answered your question.
No, it does answer my question, because I have a personal experience with that. Sorry about that noise. My ex-wife was adopted, and told and knew from the start that she was adopted, and she had serious mental problems because of it, because she felt that she was not really part of the family. and it affected her entire life. In my view, it would have been better if she never knew. She did look up her birth parents when she was in her teens. I'm not sure how old she was, and found that she had nothing in common with them. She found that her adopted, and that kind of resolved a lot of issues for her, because she went back to her adoptive parents and settled. But for the rest of her life, she felt spare, and that's just one case.
I totally believe that did affect. But one of the things that when the social workers are matching, they also map looking for which prospective adoptive parents have the psychological awareness as well, and it is discussed of how it is going to be handled. So, you know, whether it's part of that discussion about the open adoption or not open adoption, and the social workers are meant to assist with that process of deciding how to tell. Now, I mean, I don't know in your ex-wife's case whether there were biological children and she was the adopted, only one adopted. But what happens often is that adopted children are said, told, you know, we didn't choose her because we gave birth to her, but you we chose. Which turns it around totally. But you can feel different to adoptive parents. I mean, there's no similarities in looks, or very seldom. I mean, sometimes there are, but just coincidentally. But the social workers are meant to tie that up, and especially with children with any special needs. So if there'd been trauma before that child was adopted, so if in the young years, you know, whether it's the first year or whether it's in the first 5 years is obviously going to make a difference to what skills the adoptive parents need to be able to assist this child. And it's the adoption social workers who are meant to be finding that. If the child has physical disabilities or whatever, they've got to, that's that matching process is meant to be looking and tying that up. The other thing that I must add in this is, once a child reaches 10 or is younger than that but has the maturity and intelligence, the child has a say on whether they get adopted or not. So if you've been a foster parent and you've been a really bad foster parent and now they're wanting to adopt you, and you can say, no, I don't want to be adopted by these people. from 10 years old, you can say, you have a say, or 10 years old or the mature, about whether you get adopted or not. Mm. That doesn't solve all the difficulties of adoption and the feeling displaced or not belonging. I think any trauma in childhood, whether you're adopted or not, can give rise to that. So any trauma, so that matching of the prospective parents with the child who has been traumatized, whether it's through neglect or abuse or whatever, that matching element becomes much more critical than a newborn who's given up by living parents, birth parents, as you call it, because they want a better life for that child. That's a very different thing. Or a stepfather adopting. So I have another interesting case at the moment where I have foreigners who are living in the country and have been for more than a decade, and they haven't secured their permanent residency, have adopted two children, are wanting to adopt another two who have been in their care for their entire lifetimes. And we're sitting with the situation, is this an inter-country adoption because they belong to another country, they're actually citizens of another country, or is it a local adoption because they live here? So the question is, where is the social workers, who's going to vet them? If it's a local adoption, that their home and family lives and everything in their country is not being examined, but they want to stay in South Africa, they say, but there's nothing that prevents them from adopting these next children and immediately hopping on a plane and going to another country where we have no information about them. So is it an inter-country adoption with requires all the checks in their country where they're citizens, where they have not lived for more than a decade and they might have family there, but how does it, what is as good as a police check, a criminal record check, when they haven't even lived there? Surely that should be happening in this country. So that's a thing that we're busy looking at now, at how do we vet this family to make sure that these children would be safe.
And the question would be, if let's say these the adoptive parents are UK citizens, what would the children be? What citizens would they be?
They would be whichever, they would be, they would have to be accepted by the adoptive parents' citizenship. So that's the other aspect of it. So if they were going, they're living in South Africa, they get adopted in South Africa, but how do we know that the UK will accept them as citizens? And they, so that when they're adopted, they can go back to the UK. And that's what makes it partly inter-country and partly local. So as soon as you're adopted, if you're adopted across country, I mean, across countries, you have to get citizenship of that country. That's part of the Hague Convention, part of the process. So if it's a, if you're living my client's living in this country at the moment, we have to be reassured that their home country will accept these children as if born to them, you know, because that's what adoption is, which in our case is. It's been done before and it's absolutely fine as soon as you adopt. But not every country is like that. You can adopt in South Africa, but then you get back to, as you said, back to England. Are those children allowed in the country? Is that adoption recognised? Are they British citizens? That's the issue about the inter-country adoption resolves.
Oh, okay. Now, reverse that situation. My son was born in the UK, so he's got UK citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
If my sister should adopt him, which is not necessary but a possibility, would he lose his British citizenship?
That's such an interesting question. He's obviously not a baby. Under normal circumstances, yes, unless you specifically applied for a dual citizenship. So, but remembering, in your son's case, he was born in England. So even if he's adopted, and he got his citizenship through that process. So even if he's adopted by somebody else, he was still born there. You would have an unabridged birth certificate that would be able to prove that, even if his new birth certificate on after adoption showed South Africa. So he would be able to do that.
Okay.
But if he was a British citizen only through you, not that because he was born there, so he was a British citizen because you are, then he gets adopted, I don't know how he would be able to keep that, because that severs all those legal bonds. But you can always access your original unabridged birth certificate. It used to be that you can't. Even as an adult, you wouldn't be able to access that. But now you would be able to access that because that information has got to be available to you after you turn 18. So it would depend country to country whether they would accept that because that legal bond has been severed.
So there could be a negative consequence to adoption, and one has to be careful about that. I have a question about same-sex couples that want to adopt.
Absolutely allowed to, thank goodness. Recent relatively recent development, yeah.
Difficult or easy?
No more difficult or easy than heterosexual couples. They've got to prove that they're stable psychologically, financially, able to, they have, in that matching process, that they have the right psychological skills and abilities to be good parents to that child. It's not, look, in practice again, you know, people's lenses that they look at life through. If you're a big Christian and you think that these people are sinning, why would you place a baby with a couple who are sinning? But not in the law. Not in the law that there's no difference whether you cannot be what is the right word? Prejudiced because you're a same-sex couple. That's unusual. I mean, yeah, it would be the individual social worker just go find them social work.
Okay, these days it's more accepted than it was in the past.
Yeah, and in fact, the Constitution says that you can't prejudice somebody, you know, on age and blah blah blah, and sexual orientation, unless there's a reason.
So age is also not an issue.
Well, age is an issue. You can't. So the Constitution says that you can't prejudice somebody. You can't disadvantage somebody because of their age, unless. And then Section 36 kicks in and says the limitation clause, unless it's a law of general application and it makes sense. It's got a valid reason for it. So when you look at adoption and you look at age, you don't want a baby to be adopted by a couple in their 70s who aren't going to be able to see this child's life through, you know. So my parents were in their 60s when my brother was adopted at age 6, and they passed away. Brendan was 15 when my mom passed, and 16 with my dad, or was it 15? Anyway, he was a teenager, a grumpy, hard-ass, traumatized teenager who came to live. But he's turned out good, you know. He's a lovely, lovely fellow. So that's the reason, the discrimination. That's the word I was looking for all the time. Discrimination on age is illogical in adoption, because it can affect the child's childhood. The parents could die. Obviously, as I said, my brother had been with my parents for 6 years, his whole life, from a 2.5 kilogram baby, and it made sense that the advantages and the risks were different. If he had been matched with another family in the first year of his life, then they would have got preference if they'd been a younger family, whatever. But he wasn't, so my parents. The honor of having him.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anything more? I don't have any more questions.
I think that the adoption is such an opportunity for a better life for a child, when the adoption process is done thoroughly and well, and that the number of adoptions in South Africa, talking now nationally, is so low as to be shocking, and it gets a lot of attention. Process is very slow, but not difficult, in most cases, not difficult. It's just cumbersome because that adoption panel doesn't meet as frequently as it ought to, across all the provinces, and it's almost as if the Department of Social Development catch a wake up when that adoption application is before them for the first time, and then they start looking at reunification at that point instead of when the child comes into the system, which I think is just shocking and criminal and negligent. And that is one of the reasons why we have such a slow process and why so many children are still in the system who could be adopted. But the process does not cost a lot of money. There are tariffs that have to be charged for adoption social workers, and it used to be that the only adoption social workers were in private practice. DSD has been training up people, and I believe, I don't know if it has happened yet, but I believe that they are planning to have social workers who are trained adoption social workers within DSD because of the cost implication of the adoption social workers in private practice being the only option. But it's a lot cheaper than a lawyer, and the investigations should be thorough and for the best interests of the child.
Okay, but now I'm guessing that there are a lot of children that need to be adopted in South Africa that are not. You're talking about them
millions.
Being in the system.
Millions. I don't have the figures off the top of my head, but you will have heard of child-headed households as a result of, inter alia, the AIDS pandemic, where other children are looking after the rest of their families. And government responded with making sure that these kids were also able to still go to school, and they got child grants and things like that. But in any other normal scenario, those children have all been adopted as a family. And some of those child-headed households, they didn't even get into the system. So there are literally more than a million kids who would, by the definition of adoptable, the definition of whether they are adoptable, would qualify to be adopted. And we have about 3,000, 3,500 adoptions a year. So it's just absolutely crazy. One of the things I will say, though, is when I had my matter in 2019, there was a television interview with a prof from UKZN who said adoption is un-African. So I invited him for coffee and showed him cases going back to 1850 or whatever, where it is not an African. It's just there was never a formal process of adoption, but people were adopted by other families and cared for by other families in every single culture. Xhosa, Zulu, Tswana, Pedi, and we've got the records of that. And in a recent case, it was recognized that the customary law said that this child had been adopted, and so was able to get a claim against RAF. I think it was RAF, but it was a duty to support. Because they recognized that the customary law. So that mindset of adoption not being right is not as widespread as people.
But that tells me that in an ideal world that there should be some form of promotion, some form of looking for parents that may want to adopt. There should be some form of active searching for adoptive parents, be that through advertising or through churches or through social workers. And I guess that is not happening.
Now, there's a World Adoption Day. There are some outreach things. I think that society has changed so much that previously, if you didn't have children, and as a married couple, there was something wrong, but people are now choosing not to have children as well. So that need to have a child isn't as strong as it was 3 decades ago. But And it's a real conflict, you know. Do you advertise children for adoption? Because, you know, that's not a great way to treat children, you know. And we also, some of the children's homes don't do this, but you're not allowed to put photographs of children on the internet. And so some of the children's homes, you get pictures of children put up, and they should be shut down. They shouldn't be on there. That child, that you don't know what that child's future is going to be. They might not want
Absolutely.
to have a photograph on the internet that never dies that they were in lived in a children's home. That's just unacceptable. So the advertising part is tricky, but the concept of it should be I know one mom who had a biological child of her own, and then had and then adopted another a second child, and after having this baby with, and she had to wait quite a while. She went to the children's home to bath every night, and that, and while DSD was doing their jobs, and bonded quite a lot. But baby came home, and it was 6 weeks, and she was like, "I can't believe that that she didn't come out of me, because I love her exactly the same as if she had." And I thought, that could be an advert.
I'm sure
Anyway,
there are
so
s positive stories and sad stories around adoption.
and there would be more positives if the process of matching was done very carefully, the most carefully, and training. This overseas couple that are adopting, that we had to go to court to get some of the problems resolved before we could even get to the adoption court. In that country, they have to do training specifically for the age of the child that they're going to be getting and everything as well. So they've got to go on parenting training courses. The fact that these people have raised three children themselves, who are happy and well adjusted and successful and all the rest of it, psychologically sound, didn't matter. They had to go back and do a training course.
Well,
So,
that's probably good.
yeah,
That's good.
it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all I've got.
Debbie, that was excellent. Thank you very much. Thank you so much for all this information.
Thank you, Hank.
Okay.
Catch you
We're
again
going to
soon.
speak to you again soon. We're going to stop now.